seemed a little nervous. I guess maybe it was because he was meeting August for the first time. Sometimes I forget what a shock it is the first time you meet him.
Cool room.
Are you Via's boyfriend?
Augie asked mischievously, and his sister pulled his cap down over his face.
What's in your case? I said. A machine gun?
Ha, answered the boyfriend. That's funny. No, it's a... fiddle.
Justin's a fiddler, said Via. He's in a Zydeco band.
What the heck is a Zydeco band?
Said Augie, looking at me.
It's a type of music, said Justin.
Like Creole music.
What's Creole? I said.
You should tell people that's a machine gun, said Augie. Nobody would ever mess with you.
Ha, I guess you're right, Justin said, nodding and tucking his hair behind his ears. Creole's the kind of music they play in Louisiana, he said to me.
Are you from Louisiana? I asked.
No, he answered, pushing up his glasses. I'm from Brooklyn.
I don't know why this made me want to laugh.
Come on, Justin, said Via, pulling him by the hand. Let's go hang out in my room.
Okay, see you guys later. Bye, he said.
Bye.
Bye.
As soon as they left the room, Augie looked at me, smiling.
I'm from Brooklyn, I said, and we both started laughing hysterically.
Part 5. Justin. Sometimes I think my head is so big because it's so full of dreams. John Merrick in Bernard Pomerantz's The Elephant Man.
Olivia's brother. The first time I met Olivia's little brother, I have to admit, I'm totally taken by surprise. I shouldn't be, of course. Olivia's told me about his syndrome. Even has described what he looks like. But she's also talked about all his surgeries over the years, so I guess I assumed he'd be more normal looking by now. Like, when a kid is born with a cleft palate and has plastic surgery to fix it, sometimes you can't even tell except for the little scar above the lip. I guess I thought her brother would have some scars here and there, but not this. I definitely wasn't expecting to see this little kid in a baseball cap who's sitting in front of me right now. Actually, there are two kids sitting in front of me. One is a totally normal-looking kid with curly blonde hair named Jack. The other is Augie. I like to think I'm able to hide my surprise. I hope I do. Surprise is one of those emotions that can be hard to fake, though, whether you're trying to look surprised when you're not, or trying to not look surprised when you are. I shake his hand. I shake the other kid's hand. I don't want to focus on his face.
Cool room, I say.
Are you Via's boyfriend? He says. I think he's smiling. Olivia pushes down his baseball cap.
Is that a machine gun?
The blonde kid asks, like I haven't heard that one before. And we talk about Zydeco for a bit, and then Via's taking my hand and leading me out of the room. As soon as we close the door behind us, we hear them laughing.
I'm from Brooklyn, one of them sings.
Olivia rolls her eyes as she smiles. Let's go hang out in my room, she says. We've been dating for 2 months now. I knew from the moment I saw her, the minute she sat down at our table in the cafeteria, that I liked her. I couldn't keep my eyes off of her. Really beautiful, with olive skin and the bluest eyes I've ever seen in my life. At first, she acted like she only wanted to be friends. I think she kind of gives off that vibe without even meaning to. Stay back. Don't even bother. She doesn't flirt like some other girls do. She looks you right in the eye when she talks to you, like she's daring you. So, I just kept looking her right in the eye, too, like I was daring her right back. And then I asked her out, and she said yes, which rocked. She's an awesome girl, and I love hanging out with her. She didn't tell me about August until her third date. I think she used the phrase a craniofacial abnormality to describe his face. Or maybe it was craniofacial anomaly. I know the one word she didn't use was deformed, though, because that word would have registered with me.
So, what did you think? She asks me nervously the second we're inside her room.
Are you shocked?
No, I lie. She smiles and looks away.
You're shocked.
I'm not, I assure her. He's just like what you said he'd be.
She nods and plops down on her bed. Kinda cute how she still has a lot of stuffed animals on her bed. She takes one of them, a polar bear, without thinking, and puts it in her lap.
I sit down on the rolling chair by her desk. Her room is immaculate.
When I was little, she says, there were lots of kids who never came back for a second playdate. I mean, lots of kids. I even had friends who wouldn't come to my birthdays because he would be there. They never actually told me this, but it would get back to me. Some people just don't know how to deal with Augie, you know?
I nod.
It's not even like they know they're being mean, she adds. They were just scared. I mean, let's face it, his face is a little scary, right?
I guess, I answer.
But you're okay with it? She asks me sweetly. You're not too freaked out or scared?
I'm not freaked out or scared.
I smile. She nods and looks down at the polar bear on her lap. I can't tell whether she believes me or not, but then she gives the polar bear a kiss on the nose and tosses it to me with a little smile. I think that means she believes me, or at least that she wants to.
Valentine's Day.
I give Olivia a heart necklace for Valentine's Day, and she gives me a messenger bag she's made out of old floppy disks. Very cool how she makes things like that. Earrings out of pieces of circuit boards, dresses out of t-shirts, bags out of old jeans. She's so creative. I tell her she should be an artist someday, but she wants to be a scientist. A geneticist of all things. She wants to find cures for people like her brother, I guess. We make plans for me to finally meet her parents. A Mexican restaurant on Amesford Avenue near her house on Saturday night. All day long, I'm nervous about it, and when I get nervous, my tics come out. I mean, my tics are always there, but they're not like they used to be when I was little. Nothing but a few hard blinks now, the occasional head pull. But when I'm stressed, they get worse, and I'm definitely stressing about meeting her folks. They're waiting inside when I get to the restaurant. The dad gets up and shakes my hand, and the mom gives me a hug. I give Augie a hello fist punch and kiss Olivia on the cheek before I sit down.
It's so nice to meet you, Justin. We've heard so much about you.
Her parents couldn't be nicer. Put me at ease right away. The waiter brings over the menus, and I notice his expression the moment he lays eyes on August, but I pretend not to notice. I guess we're all pretending not to notice things tonight. The waiter, like tics, the way August crushes the tortilla chips on the table and spoons the crumbs into his mouth. I look at Olivia, and she smiles at me. She knows. She sees the waiter's face. She sees my tics. Olivia is a girl who sees everything. We spend the entire dinner talking and laughing. Olivia's parents ask me about my music, how I got into the fiddle and stuff like that. And I tell them about how I used to play classical violin, but I got into Appalachian folk music and then Zydeco. And they're listening to every word, like they're really interested. They tell me to let them know the next time my band's playing a gig so they can come listen. I'm not used to all the attention, to be truthful. My parents don't have a clue about what I want to do with my life. They never ask. We never talk like this. I don't think they even know I traded my Baroque violin for an 8-string Hardanger fiddle 2 years ago. After dinner, we go back to Olivia's for some ice cream. Their dog greets us at the door. An old dog. Super sweet. She'd thrown up all over the hallway, though. Olivia's mom rushes to get paper towels while the dad picks the dog up like she's a baby. "What's up, old girlie?" he says. And the dog's in heaven, tongue hanging out, tail wagging, legs in the air at awkward angles.
"Dad, tell Justin how you got Daisy," says Olivia.
"Yeah," says Augie. The dad smiles and sits down in a chair with the dog still cradled in his arms. It's obvious he's told this story lots of times, and they all love to hear it.
"So I'm coming home from the subway one day," he says, "and a homeless guy I've never seen in this neighborhood before is pushing this floppy mutt in a stroller, and he comes up to me and says, 'Hey, mister, want to buy my dog?' And without even thinking about it, I say, 'Sure, how much you want?' And he says, $10. So I give him the $20 I have in my wallet, and he hands me the dog. Justin, I'm telling you, you've never smelled anything so bad in your life. She stinks so much, I can't even tell you. So I took her right from there to the vet down the street, and then I brought her home."
"Didn't even call me first, by the way," the mom interjects as she cleans the floor, "to see if I'm okay with his bringing home some homeless guy's dog."
The dog actually looks over at the mom when she says this, like she understands everything everyone is saying about her. She's a happy dog, like she knows she lucked out that day finding this family. I kind of know how she feels. I like Olivia's family. They laugh a lot. My family's not like this at all. My mom and dad got divorced when I was 4, and they pretty much hate each other. I grew up spending half of every week in my dad's apartment in Chelsea, and the other half in my mom's place in Brooklyn Heights. I have a half-brother who's 5 years older than me and barely knows I exist. For as long as I can remember, I felt like my parents could hardly wait for me to be old enough to take care of myself. "You can go to the store by yourself. Here's the key to the apartment." It's funny how there's a word like overprotective to describe some parents, but no word that means the opposite. What word do you use to describe parents who don't protect enough? Underprotective? Neglectful? Self-involved? Lame? All of the above. Olivia's family tell each other, "I love you," all the time. I can't remember the last time anyone in my family said that to me. By the time I go home, my tics have all stopped. Our Town. We're doing the play Our Town for the spring show this year. Olivia dares me to try out for the lead role, the stage manager, and somehow I get it. Total fluke. Never got any lead roles in anything before. I tell Olivia she brings me good luck. Unfortunately, she doesn't get the female lead, Emily Gibbs. The pink-haired girl named Miranda gets it. Olivia gets a bit part and is also the Emily understudy. I'm actually more disappointed than Olivia is. She almost seems relieved. "I don't love people staring at me," she says, which is sort of strange coming from such a pretty girl. A part of me thinks maybe she blew her audition on purpose. The spring show is at the end of April. It's mid-March now, so that's less than 6 weeks to memorize my part, plus rehearsal time, plus practicing with my band, plus finals, plus spending time with Olivia. It's going to be a rough 6 weeks, that's for sure. Mr. Davenport, the drama teacher, is already manic about the whole thing. Will drive us crazy by the time it's over, no doubt. I heard through the grapevine that he'd been planning on doing The Elephant Man, but changed it to Our Town at the last minute, and that change took a week off of our rehearsal schedule. Not looking forward to the craziness of the next month and a half. Ladybug. Olivia and I are sitting on her front stoop. She's helping me with my lines. It's a warm March evening, almost like summer. The sky is still bright cyan, but the sun is low and the sidewalks are streaked with long shadows. I'm reciting, "Yes, the sun's come up over 1,000 times. Summers and winters have cracked the mountains a little bit more, and the rains have brought down some of the dirt. Some babies that weren't even born before have begun talking regular sentences already. And a number of people who thought they were right young and spry have noticed that they can't bound up a flight of stairs like they used to, without their heart fluttering a little..." I shake my head. I can't remember the rest. "All that can happen in 1,000 days, Olivia prompts me, reading from the script. "Right, right, right," I say, shaking my head. I sigh. I'm wiped, Olivia. How the heck am I going to remember all these lines? "You will," she answers confidently. She reaches out and cups her hands over a ladybug that appears out of nowhere. "See? A good luck sign," she says, slowly lifting her top hand to reveal the ladybug walking on the palm of her other hand.
Good luck or just the hot weather, I joke.
Of course good luck, she answers, watching the ladybug crawl up her wrist. There should be a thing about making a wish on a ladybug.
Augie and I used to do that with fireflies when we were little. She cups her hands over the ladybug again. Come on, make a wish. Close your eyes.
I dutifully close my eyes. A long second passes, then I open them.
Did you make a wish? She asks.
Yep.
She smiles, uncups her hands, and the ladybug, as if on cue, spreads its wings and flits away.
Don't you want to know what I wished for? I ask, kissing her.
No, she answers shyly, looking up at the sky, which, at this very moment, is the exact color of her eyes.
I made a wish, too, she says mysteriously, but she has so many things she could wish for, I have no idea what she's thinking.
The bus stop. Olivia's mom, Augie, Jack, and Daisy come down the stoop just as I'm saying goodbye to Olivia. Slightly awkward since we're in the middle of a nice long kiss.
Hey guys, says the mom, pretending not to see anything, but the two boys are giggling.
Hi, Mrs. Pullman.
Please call me Isabel, Justin, she says again. It's like the third time she's told me this, so I really need to start calling her then.
I'm heading home, I say, as if to explain.
Oh, are you heading to the subway? She says, following the dog with a newspaper.
Can you walk Jack to the bus stop?
No problem.
That okay with you, Jack? The mom asks him, and he shrugs.
Justin, can you stay with him till the bus comes?
Of course.
We all say our goodbyes. Olivia winks at me.
You don't have to stay with me, Jack says as we're walking up the block. I take the bus by myself all the time. Augie's mom is way too overprotective.
He's got a low, gravelly voice, like a little tough guy. He kind of looks like one of those little rascal kids in the old black and white movies, like he should be wearing a newsboy cap and knickers.
We get to the bus stop, and the schedule says the bus will be there in 8 minutes.
I'll wait with you, I tell him.
Up to you, he shrugs.
Can I borrow a dollar? I want some gum.
I fish a dollar out of my pocket and watch him cross the street to the grocery store on the corner. He seems too small to be walking around by himself somehow. Then I think how I was that young when I was taking the subway by myself. Way too young. I'm going to be an overprotective dad someday, I know it. My kids are going to know I care.
I'm waiting there a minute or two when I notice three kids walking up the block from the other direction. They walk right past the grocery store, but one of them looks inside and nudges the other two. They all back up and look inside. I can tell they're up to no good, all elbowing each other, laughing. One of them is Jack's height, but the other two look much bigger, more like teens. They hide behind the fruit stand in front of the store, and when Jack walks out, they trail behind him, making loud throw-up noises. Jack casually turns around at the corner to see who they are, and they run away, high-fiving each other and laughing. Little jerks. Jack crosses the street like nothing happened and stands next to me at the bus stop, blowing a bubble.
Friends of yours? I finally say.
Ha, he says. He's trying to smile, but I can see he's upset.
Just some jerks from my school, he says. A kid named Julian and his two gorillas, Henry and Miles.
Do they bother you like that a lot?
No, they've never done that before. They'd never do that in school or they'd get kicked out. Julian lives two blocks from here, so I guess it was just bad luck running into him.
Oh, okay, I nod.
It's not a big deal, he assures me. We both automatically look down Amesford Avenue to see if the bus is coming.
We're sort of in a war, he says after a minute, as if that explains everything.
Then he pulls out this crumpled piece of loose-leaf paper from his jean pocket and gives it to me. I unfold it, and it's a list of names in three columns.
He's turned the whole grade against me, says Jack.
Not the whole grade, I point out, looking down at the list.
He leaves me notes in my locker that say stuff like, everybody hates you.
You should tell your teacher about that.
Jack looks at me like I'm an idiot and shakes his head.
Anyway, you have all these neutrals, I say, pointing to the list.
If you get them on your side,